And now I'm here with Amy Peck, founder and CEO of Endeavor VR. How you doing, Amy?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for joining me today. And you are one of those people that is pushing the envelope in terms of technology, right? Tell us about your business, and we're interested in how you got into augmented reality, virtual reality, and all this technical stuff.
Yes, I spent a lot of time in AR and VR. I launched the enterprise division at a company called Leap Motion, which is this, looks like a tiny little iPhone that you just plug into your computer and allows you to manipulate objects on your computer using just your hands, no mouse, no keyboard.
Oh, okay.
And so that was about the same time, I don't know if you remember the Oculus DK1, it was the very first developer version of the virtual reality goggles.
Okay, and yeah, let's talk about what those are for a second, because I think a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with the Oculus. These are actually a little headset that you put on, and you're able to step into another world.
Exactly, that's exactly right. And you can't see your surroundings, so you really are fully immersed. And so the very first version came out, and it was really just for developers. And in our, you know, infinite wisdom and super high tech, you know, we duct taped a Leap Motion to the front of this DK1 device. And it allowed me and everyone to see my hands in a virtual environment. And there was a company we were working with, I think it was called Chaotic Moon. And they built a game called Shark Punch, which is exactly as it sounds. So you're in this virtual mm-hmm. environment, and sharks were coming at you, and you were able to punch them. And I thought, this changes everything for business in mm-hmm. particular. And we weren't really thinking about how virtual reality and Leap Motion were going to combine. But that moment was really the turning point for me. And I thought, this is what I want to do. So I stayed with Leap Motion for about 2 more years. But they were really a consumer play. They wanted to just be on everybody's desktop. What I discovered through that process was that there were a lot of companies who were looking at immersive technologies, but they really didn't understand how they could leverage this technology. And so I started Endeavor VR to really help companies kind of draw a line between the problems in their business and how immersive tech could help.
Okay, so thinking about the business itself, who you connect up, how you draw that line, can you give us an example of what that looks like?
Yeah, so we look at ourselves as Switzerland. So we're hardware and software agnostic. And we work with our companies, and we don't say, you know, what problems are you trying to solve necessarily. We say, what does the future of work look like for you? And then we look at immersive technologies and sometimes other technologies like AI and blockchain and combine those elements to really engage the future workforce.
Okay.
And so for healthcare, for example, simulation training has been around for decades. The military has been using it. It's for aviation training. You've probably seen some of those giant bucks. So now we can do it in a much more lightweight fashion using these headsets. And then the second piece now is augmented reality, which you probably heard of mm-hmm. as well, and a lot of the audience have heard of. The fundamental difference is that, like I mentioned, you can't see your surroundings in virtual reality. In augmented reality, it's kind of like Pokemon Go, right, where they're digital objects in your field of view. But eventually we're going to have these wearable glasses where everything will just be projected in your field of view. So when you start thinking about that and the future of work, then really it opens up the playing field.
So augmented reality, you don't wear the glasses, the headset necessarily. I guess mm-hmm. you could wear glasses, but mm-hmm. but the virtual reality, you actually put on this headset and you immerse yourselves more fully.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Okay, so thinking about that, so you talk about healthcare. What other industries do you see being transformed through this kind of technology?
It really touches every industry. I think one of the verticals that is utilizing the technology in one of the best ways is the automotive industry, because really the technology touches every business line. So what they're doing now is they might design in virtual reality. Right now they have to build these giant bucks, right? So they're replicas of the new vehicles. And they literally ship them between design teams, which is very expensive, very time consuming. So design teams can actually iterate in a virtual environment collaboratively using VR. Then those same 3D assets that they create can go towards manufacturing, training, mm-hmm. marketing, and even in the form of a car configurator in the dealership for consumers.
Wow.
So that's taking that one asset and using it across multiple business lines. And that's really how you start to get to economy of scale.
Well, you think about the history or the evolution of this. So today we're beginning to hear about it. The average consumer is beginning to hear about it. Maybe some of the more technical people are beginning to use it. How long before, let's say, it's commonplace inside a vehicle? So now we're talking about manufacturing the vehicle and using it to maybe even help market a vehicle. But how long before we're in the vehicle and we're able to see these, virtual maps or other products that might be helpful in helping us enjoy the experience in a vehicle?
So those are coming. In fact, if you've ever been in the newer BMWs, they have that heads-up display. Audi has it as well. So that's an AR mechanism. We're actually working with a company that once we have fully autonomous vehicles, which will be very exciting, you'll actually just be in the back of your car and we can really trust that they're autonomous. You can actually change everything in the windows. Like you could be not in a traffic jam, you could be on safari. Mm-hmm. You could be watching a movie. You could have your desktop up, your multiple screens, you know, Minority Report style.
Right.
You could be FaceTiming your kids. Like we're going to get all this time back.
Yeah.
So now we can kind of blend that digital and real world experience.
So part of the big benefit of this long term is that we're going to have productivity increases galore, right? Is that kind of the idea?
Well, we'd like to think that we're going to develop a better work-life balance because we'll be more efficient, but historically, that has not been true. Uh-huh. Historically, when we have more time, we just work more. But yeah, I hope the opposite is true.
What about the imagination as we start thinking about advertising? You're driving down the road, whether it be autonomously or in your own vehicle, and you start seeing some of these advertisements that retarget us now on Facebook, targeting us because of where we are on the interstate.
Well, I actually have a slightly different take on that.
Okay.
So we'll have to go into the blockchain realm a little bit. So blockchain is not just cryptocurrency. Blockchain is a way to securely record any kind of transaction. So in the wake of all the Facebook data and data mining and Russia and all of these things that we've been hearing about, there's a movement for us to take control of our data. Right, take responsibility for our data, take our healthcare data back, take our personal data back. So I imagine a future where we own our data, we actually give marketers permission to use that data as long as they're delivering relevant content that we care about, and they're going to pay us in cryptocurrency.
Aha.
This is my utopian vision. What do you think?
I like it, but let's talk about time frame, because so many today they announced that there's a new 5G phone coming out from Verizon, and so many of these technologies start off and they seem cool, but until they become more reality, give us a sense of the time horizon for some of these changes that we're sort of dreaming about today.
Well, if you look at the evolution of mobile, that's sort of a good benchmark, right? My dad's first mobile phone was in a briefcase,
right?
And his phone in his car was hardwired. It had like this little spiral, remember? So it took us a long time to get to these, you know, devices that we can't live without today. That iteration life cycle is a much shorter now, but it's still going to be a decade before it is truly ubiquitous. And by ubiquitous, I mean we have a wearable that is essentially everything that we're accessing on our mobile devices today can be seamlessly projected in our field of view. Then if we want to go into a virtual environment, and I think of a virtual environment as a destination, right? You're going in to learn something, do something, play something, see something. And that will just be a hood. And that will put you in a virtual environment. And you will sort of move seamlessly through realities. Like, we're not going to talk about which reality we're in the future. It's going to be the Matrix, right? Uh-huh. We're just going to kind of move in and out.
Well, from an industry standpoint, what money is driving this innovation? Is it from corporations? Is it venture capitalists? It takes money to create these products.
Yeah, so that's interesting. We finally got out of Gartner jail. So we got off the Gartner hype cycle. Augmented reality ironically, is actually still in, although, you know, all of our mobile devices now are AR-enabled. We just haven't found the real use case. I sort of think of use cases as needing two main components. It has to be entertaining and it has to be useful. And we haven't really hit that yet, but I think we will. So in terms of investment, it runs the gamut. I think for VR, investment's really coming from enterprise because that's where they're getting the most traction. For AR, it's mobile companies, Verizon, in AT&T. If you look at Magic Leap, has taken in $2.4 billion to build really the first AR truly
are
wearable glasses.
Are these your clients? Are these the type of people that you're working with to help drive this technology?
Some of them are. So I work with a number of different kind of providers. I'm actually speaking in 2 weeks at the 3GPP conference, which is actually the 5G standards. It's sort of a standards body to look at what are some of the standards, how are we going to use this, what are the use cases. I just wrote a chapter in a book by a gentleman called Charlie Fink, who's a Forbes contributor. And his book is called Convergence, The World Will Be Painted with Data. And I think that's actually a really beautiful way to articulate what's going to happen, that any wall, any space in the future might have 50 or 100 or 2,000 different sort of digital experiences that are just waiting for us to discover. So we need some kind of mechanism to define, what do I want to see now? Which one of those is interesting to me?
Does the free market decide on these standards, or is this something that maybe is monitored by the government or something like that to help set some of these things that are kind of game-changing for the country? Yeah. So just kind of thinking, I remember the beta VHS, right? That was all about businesses being first to market and so on. How do you make the decision in terms of standardization and this kind of thing?
Well, it's a lot of the large companies, you know, work together to sort of develop streamlined standards. Mobile was very sort of fractious in the beginning, so hopefully we've learned a little bit of a lesson there. But all of this technology is coming so quickly. The government's trying to wrap its arms around it to make sure that there's legislation for safety and data protection. It takes a village, and it's a very big village indeed. It's all the large companies, it's government entities. We're all involved.
Yeah, and you think about this kind of time, these kinds of efforts, they're long-term investments. So for an investor to put money in and expect to get money back out, is that happening today? Or is this, from an investor standpoint, a long-term play, and if you're a large corporation, you're betting, you're looking three hills over and just taking some of your, like, almost like R&D money and putting it toward it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. From an investment standpoint, it's a minimum 18 month, and that's sort of best case scenario, because we really haven't nailed down significant revenue models other than, like I mentioned, design firms for, designing in virtual reality, certain kind of 3D asset library management systems, which are sort of starting to come out. But it's definitely a long play, and you have to have the vision and the patience for it.
Who are the entrepreneurs that are jumping into this? Besides yourself, you're obviously playing the part of bringing people together, but what about the people that just love the technology, they like to build stuff? What kind of people are these?
You know, it's interesting. I'm a venture partner at the Capital Region VR AR Accelerator, and I was introduced to John Gregory by Tipitat Chenavasan, and it's taken me about 3 years to be able to pronounce his name, so yes. Mm-hmm. But he is one of the founders of the VR Fund, and they started 3 years ago, investing in VR. So they believe in this technology, and it's very interesting time because it's still a very small ecosystem. I call us the second grade soccer team because mm-hmm. we just travel in a pack around the VR ball.
Okay, so it's like the same people. When you go to a small conference, it's really the same people going.
Okay,
interesting.
Yes, which is great because we all have access to one another. So we exchange information. We are all able to really help some of these young companies find an audience with either enterprise entities or find some kind of path to the consumer.
Okay, so now you are a very attractive entrepreneurial, great speaker. You know, you are not who I picture walking around with these goggles on. Is right? You sort of almost picture more of the geek group running with these packs, and then someone like yourself shows up. Talk to us about what that culture is. Am I totally mistaken? Am I totally stereotyping?
Well, first of all, I look awesome in flannel, so you're wrong about I have my geek chops. No, it runs the gamut, and what's been really nice too is there's a lot of great women in virtual reality.
Okay,
and you know, we all just kind of work together, and we work really hard, and we don't really follow the typical geek prototype to your point, but you know, geek is the new black, right? We're all actually kind of this cool group. We love technology. We love the future, and we're all in.
Well, why do I always hear that women are less likely to dive into these real technical roles or technical occupations? Is that still the case, or do we have a long way to go?
We do have a very long way to go, and I think on the programming side, it's still, you know, a sort of a boys' network, and it's hard to break in. What has been great is that through this kind of whole Me Too movement, and I actually wrote an article called Me Plus Three, which is an answer to that, to Me Too. It's not discounting what happened, but moving forward from it, and as a woman, try and affect three women who are closest to you.
Interesting.
And I believe that that's one way to move forward. And for women as well as men and our allies, because we don't need to be going to war with men, right? I love working with men. Men are fun. So we just have to start to find what the new rules are and what that, we know what the black area is, we know what the white area is. What we need to do is just define that area of gray, and I think we all need to do that together.
Can I dive a little more into the Me Plus Three? So this is where a woman identifies three people in her sphere and does what?
And mentors or helps or opens a door or inspires in some way. And so we have some incredible programs. I work with a group called Women in XR, and they're an XR fund. They're investing primarily in women-run businesses. And so they're doing their part, right? And they've bet on some really amazing companies and some really strong founders. And then those women, in turn, have become mentors for the next generation of entrepreneurs. So, and it's actually kind of comes back to why I believe VR is so important, because when you go into virtual reality, you can be anything, and you can actually create the best version of yourself. So I believe from an education standpoint, and even with kids and even some of the learning challenges or social challenges, that if we can show kids what the future is and who they can be and elevate their world, they'll come back out into the real world and be able to believe in themselves that much further because they've seen it. They've seen it in a virtual environment.
Well, we only have a few minutes left. Just, if you don't mind, maybe give us some thoughts on where you see Sacramento. You have obviously been spending a lot of time here with AR, VR, and the Pitch Fest. I mean, where do you see Sacramento in terms of helping drive some of these technologies?
I was so impressed when I was introduced. Actually, I came up, you were the fine host of the Pitch Fest last year about this time, I think. And I was amazed that this ecosystem was essentially in my backyard, because I live in Sausalito. And so I reached out to John Gregory from Five Star Bank, and I said, how do I get involved? Because I'm really impressed with not only the talent that's here, but really the ecosystem that you've built. And everyone is sort of feeding off of everyone else. And actually even here where we're housed at Haney Biz, the resources that you're providing for startups is tremendous. And this is actually how we build the future, right? Is by providing all of these resources. We've got great companies. Everybody's intermingling. And I'm very impressed. So I make that 2-hour drive and I'm happy to do it. I love being up here.
Well, okay. So closing thoughts to somebody out there who's thinking, I want to be like Amy Peck, or I want to get involved in this technical world, in this world of entertainment, in this world that's transforming the way we live. How do we get involved? Can you think of steps that might go into this?
Absolutely. There's a lot of events. First of all, there's a conference coming up in Santa Clara called Augmented World Expo. We're actually a pretty accessible group. I mean, I have people reach out to me via LinkedIn. I encourage people to reach out to Women in XR. I encourage people to reach out to Tipitat at the VR Fund. We actually respond. I have individual developers. There's a lot of great resources out there. So I urge people to explore, reach out to you, reach out to us, reach out to the AR/VR Accelerator here in the Capital Region. We're happy to help and steer you in the right direction.
Amy Peck, founder and CEO of Endeavor VR. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thanks so much, Mark.
You bet.